Hey and welcome to Observations. Today I would like to read and then maybe talk a little bit about an article published in 2023, November 30th, on the Duke University Libraries blog by a person named Will Sexton. And the name is Why We Are Dropping Basecamp. So it leads with a screenshot of some Microsoft application that says, important, let Basecamp subscription lapse. And the article starts like this. We at Duke University Libraries have decided to stop using the project management platform Basecamp, to which we have subscribed for almost a decade. We came to this decision after weighing the level of its use in our organization, which is considerable, against the harms that we see perpetuated by the leadership of Basecamp's parent company, 37 Signals. So, I'm not yet done with the intro, but some background info, 37 Signals is a very old internet company, like very old from my perspective. I guess their main claim to fame is Ruby on Rails in like 2005. So when the whole Python, Ruby, dynamic language hype was going on, they used this. So there's a guy called DHH, David Heinemann Meyer Hansen, who was in favor of and like started this company. And in the meantime, they published a bunch of projects, as in products that you can subscribe to, like they did Ruby on Rails, and then with Ruby on Rails they did this thing called Basecamp, which this article talks about, which is like a team management software that is very straightforward, web servery, no complicated JavaScript front end like most not modern web apps. And they also did Hey later in like 2015, which is an email client. And yeah, and they also published like a bunch of books, and DHS was already always very public about his opinions in the code space and in how to program, what good ideas are for team management, and apparently recently also on we'll get to that. So let's continue this. As a result of our discussions, we will not renew our current subscription when it ends in December. In the meantime, a small group of our staff have committed to help colleagues export their Basecamp content, so it can be archived, and we will move to using other productivity platforms. In July of this year, in a team chat, one of our colleagues shared a link to a blog post authored by one of the founders and owners of 37 Signals and commented, "We really might want to rethink our usage of Basecamp." So I guess you can already guess who this person is that is the founder and owner of 37 Signals that wrote a blog post. And you might have already read the blog post, but I think I'm gonna get to that as well. It jogged our memories of events some 26 months earlier, when another colleague shared an article published on The Verge, Breaking Camp. As reported, internal conflict regarding a culturally insensitive list of funny, in scare quotes, customer names led Basecamp's leadership to ban employees from holding societal and political discussions in, like, citation, societal and political discussions, ignoring that the conflict focused on the workplace dynamics. Mass resignations resulted, and the experiences of the employees interviewed paints a picture of company leaders who initially supported diversity, equity, and inclusion, DEI, activities, but eventually placed severe restrictions on how those activities could play out at work. In a playbook for the ages, those in power failed to acknowledge the complicated interconnectedness and nuance of the issues under discussion, and set policies that shut down discussions challenging the company culture. So, first off, I think it's really important, it's really interesting that, like, we're talking about a university library here, right? And they manage probably like a bunch, couple of million a year. So those are like US university libraries that are pretty big on cash, because they also have to pay all of the extractive fees of all the paper journals and all of that crap. So they are pretty used to thinking about how to spend money and what they're giving money to, right? So they are very aware of where money goes that they have. They know how much money they have, and probably everybody there has like a base understanding of these things. But also, they're usually like somebody who works at these libraries, they probably don't work there because they want to earn a lot of cash, but they work there because they're interested in spreading knowledge and supporting people who want to do research. So those are very thoughtful people that probably have like a higher degree of thinking about societal issues. And I think a company that has internal discussions of this kind, or like not a company, but like a team inside of some bigger institution, and like having people that are actively think about this stuff is very important on healthy teams, and also principle discussions, right? So like coming from what are our values, like first of all having shared values, right? And in this you can also see a big difference between 37 Signals culture and the Duke Library culture, as in the 37 Signals culture is, oh, somebody shared some probably racist, like, I don't think it has been officially said what the thing is, but clicking through the Verge article from 2021, which I'm not going to read right now. It looks like they probably had some racist stuff internally, and instead of, well, I mean, that probably caused a lot of discussions, and instead of having these discussions, DHH and his co-founders and like the people who own this company basically just said, oh, okay, there's not going to be any discussions on this kind of crap anymore, and if you don't like this, then you can leave. And so a lot of people left. Compare this to the library that said, oh, wait, that is like a bottom-up thing where somebody is like, hey, is this a good thing to do? And then they have a discussion, and then they make a decision, which they publish here. So this is like top-down versus bottom-up. And I think this is also gonna come through later in, in the articles. So it continues like, Will Sexton continues on. And I think this article is probably not written by one person, just published by one person, but after a lot of internal discussions. So this is probably more of a multiple people consensus thing than rather than a one person opinion. Continues to write, the discussions we had in 2021 identified concerns about both the culture at Basecamp and the impact a decision to leave it would have on our daily work. So remember, this article is from 2023, so this was 2 years earlier. Staff reflected on the case of using the platform, the large number of projects that rely on it, and the complication of a decision that would impact groups across the libraries in such a direct way. While we talked about how we might respond to the values of third-party companies, we eventually decided not to pursue a cancellation. So they had this discussion 2 years earlier. They looked at the, well, it was clearly a project that they depended on, right, very heavily. And they saw that the company was kind of breaking at the seams, and they were like, should we maybe leave this? But they were probably too dependent on this and decided that it would be safer to keep using it, and it's probably fine, like the product itself wouldn't be going down the drain anytime soon, so they probably said, okay, let's keep this for now. When we revisited the discussion this summer, it took a decidedly different direction. The blog post that our colleague shared in July, titled "The Law of the Land" by 37 Signals co-founder, co-owner and CTO David Heinemeier Hansen, that is DHH, celebrates the US Supreme Court's ruling ending considerations of race in admission to colleges and universities. In that post, Hansen links to another that drew our attention, the waning days of DEI's dominance. We also read a third post of his, "Meta goes no politics at work and nobody cares." We found there a thread of ugly thought couched in an overriding intellectual dishonesty that re-escalated our discussion about the continued use of Basecamp. Sorry, I said Bandcamp, which is a completely different thing. So essentially what DHH writes in these articles is a pretty obvious white supremacist view of things. Well, I mean, in the first few articles he's still kinda dog whistling a bunch by saying, oh, but DEI and stuff, it's like it destroys our union, it destroys the US. And I think he's not even a US citizen. I think he's Danish. So he's talking about, well, not his own country there. Which is interesting because I'm talking about this in 2026, which is 3 years later, and the most recent article of his is basically just straight up Mein Kampf, white supremacist bullshit about shooting Roma like they're wolves. So this has been very prescient. And one thing to... one interesting thing about this, that this is his blog, right? But it's also hosted at world.hey.com/DHH. So this is an official company domain of their hey.com company, which basically makes this somewhat officially company policy. Which is an interesting choice because he's still, like, his opinions are still his own, right? But he's obviously posting them from his company context, which means that basically what he posts there is official company policy. So this is a privately owned company, right? They don't have any investors, and like part of their shtick is that you can build a company that doesn't have any investing and any VC money. That means that they are completely independent and can say whatever they want. And he's really saying whatever he wants, which is, yeah, turning out to be quite racist. Let's continue this. We're not going to address each of the many falsehoods and distortions in the blog post by David Heinemeier Hansen. Instead, we will focus on a few emblematic statements that stand in for a pattern of rhetoric that runs counter to our own values. And so this is a very important point, is that they're not just arguing against this, or not just saying, oh, we did this because we didn't like one of his posts. They're saying, oh, we have values here, and these inform what we do, right? So based on these values, we analyzed what this person, this company that we depend upon is saying, and then we draw conclusions from that. So the first thing that they have is values, which is probably easier if you are part of university, because that's kind of your mission statement in a way. But I feel like every good company, every good team starts by having values that are clearly communicated and shared. Because without them, you get stuff like, no politics here, please. We are just technical people. And then person Hitlering out a few years later. In the Waning Days piece, Hansen depicts diversity, equity, and inclusion as a movement that became entrenched in 2020, a process he characterizes being accelerated by a number of factors, including, quote, the riots in the wake of George Floyd. Referring to the protests that followed the murder of George Floyd as riots, in an offhand gesture as Hansen uses it. But it gets our attention because we know how false, ideological, and ugly it is. Research and the documentary record show that the protests of 2020 were overwhelmingly peaceful and that incidents of violence were limited and often instigated by counter-protesters or provocateurs, and that in many cases the responses of the police and federal authorities provoked and exacerbated the violence. The characterization of these events as riots follows as part of a deliberate disinformation campaign by right-wing groups, media's distorting focus on isolated incidents, and biased framing by political campaigns. It plays on a long-standing and shameful tendency in the US of depicting any protest or demands for justice for black members of our society as innately violent and threatening. Sorry, I said I meant from black members. So basically, the people in the US, especially the right wing, they will see somebody from that is black say, hey, you're doing us wrong here. And then they will point towards something that happens, that somebody got shot or something. And they will spin it in a way that it looks like the black people are just fundamentally violent, and like anything that gets done to protect the country or like protect the state is basically to avoid this violence and to work around it, right? Which is a remnant of the slave trade, and I mean the South is still ruled by people who had slaves just like a couple of decades ago, some of which are probably still alive, right? It's not that long ago. So these are real problems that are still there. And depicting something as a riot that is mainly a peaceful process, protest is part of that storytelling. Let's go on. In the same post, Hansen takes glee in the mass layoffs of tech workers in late 2022. He imagines that they were the group from which, oh, were the group, quote, from which the DEI movement drew its most active and engaged disciples, end quote, and seems to be delighted that, quote, hundreds of thousands, end quote, of tech workers will be out of work, quote, perhaps for quite a while, end quote, and therefore, quote, the most fervent ideologues among them, end quote, will be unable to find work. The implication is unavoidable that he and perhaps other tech bosses might blacklist workers who have records of advocating for more diverse and inclusive workplaces. Hansen certainly is entitled to his opinion and to publish his own blog. Pay attention again, this is like not just his own blog, but his company's blog, right? His company domain, which tries to be like an email provider, which also has the interesting decision that your email will always be using their domain. You can't use your own domain. So like if you are customer.com, you will always have a hey.com domain, which means that if their founder is spouting racist bullshit on hey.com, that means that you are now part of something, of a domain that is also associated with white racism, like with white supremacism. Fun times for people who thought that was a good investment to put their email account there. Okay, I'm continuing. We are not in the habit of running ideological enforcement to ensure quick compliance from beleaguered corporate executives or whatever it is that he's talking about in his posts. There's so many quotes here. I'm not sure how to say, like, read this in a way that is easier to understand which part is a quote. So I'm trying this again. We are not in the habit of running, quote, ideological enforcement, end quote, to ensure, quote, quick compliance, end quote, from beleaguered corporate executives or whatever it is that he's talking about in his posts. We simply have our own opinions and our own blogs. In some cases, we have good choices available to us regarding the companies to which we give our business. After all, we are the libraries. We have plenty of experience with corporate entities that don't reflect our values. We deal with the journal publishers who practice a business model that hoards the world's knowledge and maximizes profit from the research that our university scholars conduct. When it comes to the academic publishing system, institutions of higher learning have made a deal with the devil, and we, the libraries, are the campus units who pay the bill. We do it every year, often facing steep price increases with flat budgets. So yeah, I mean, they know about this stuff, right? They know how to budget stuff, and they have a bunch of pretty toxic customer relationships already with other places. Continuing, we also know all too well the very worst of what humanity can create because we collect it. I think this paragraph is gonna be the important, like this is gonna be the crux, right? Our shelves hold some of the most god-awful, hateful stuff you can imagine, in the form of explicit hate literature. And the much larger bulk of mainstream materials we hold are pervaded by casual racism and assumptions of white supremacy. Our job is to maintain it all for research and to provide the context required for responsible inquiry. We know that our collections as a whole are themselves the legacies of systems of oppression in what they do and do not contain. The entire foundation of our organization was developed on assumptions in the early days of Duke University that excluded groups would not use the materials we collect or the services we provide. We know about these legacies and we reckon with them by considering the harm we've caused and asking what we can do to mitigate it. We also know the harms that our own workplace practices and culture have caused over the years. We know about it because we listen to each other, both informally and formally, via climate surveys, workshops, and other practices. So this is where the bottom-up approach comes in again, right? So they are super reflective and they try to have bottom-up discussions about this shit. They try to reflect. They try to find their own biases. They're trying to find the biases in the materials they provide, and they try to counter-steer with practices like DEI or with practices like reflecting on what kind of software they use. The point is not that we're perfect or a model to emulate. The point is that we are not naive. We have seen and done some stuff. So when we encounter a tech company boss who takes in a nationwide movement of organized protest against police brutalization and systemic racism led by black activists, and amplifies the rare incidents of violence, much of it instigated by the police or right-wing counter-protesters, using the mendacious language of extremists to refer to it as riots, we have a good idea of what we're looking at. So this is a very, like, they phrase this very, like, not very strongly. They phrase this in a way that is calmly describing what they think they're looking at, what they're seeing. And I think that's the only approach to basically keep the moral and ethical upper hand is not to like most people on social media, they immediately start calling people fascists whenever, like, I'm not like I'm not immune to that, right? They try to escalate things. They try to pattern match on things they read or maybe thought they have read. But they're not calmly describing what is happening, right? And I think that's something that is direly missing in today's discussion, is these people who calmly describe what they're seeing and, like, draw their own conclusions from it. Which is also what I'm trying to do here with this series that has exactly zero entries so far, but this might be the first. And yeah, this is observations. This is like make observations, check your knowledge, check the world knowledge on this, look into the past, ask people who you know have good think a lot of these about these things and ask them of their opinions, and then draw your conclusions. This is the point, is not that we're perfect or a model to emulate. The point is that we are not naive, and, like, don't be naive, right? This is the most important thing. And the thing is that people who are sensitive to this, like these people, they do this in 2023, and then 3 years later you get blog post by the same guy called Wolf, Sheep, and Gypsies, where he starts out by saying, oh, the first wolf in Denmark was spotted then and then, but then they multiplied and multiplied, and then the Danish said, oh, we can't shoot them anymore, and now suddenly there's lots of sheep who are dying, so we should actually shoot all the wolves. And then he directly continues with, like, oh, and then there's Roma sleeping in the parks in Copenhagen, and so they're also multiplying, and what should we do with them? Probably deport them, right? Or maybe something even worse, which he's not talking about, but like these people have noticed this, like, 3 years ago, that this is where this is going, and so this is where this went, and it's probably just gonna go worse, get worse from here, right? So an important lesson from this that I can draw is listen to the people who are sensitive to this stuff. I mean, the old, yeah, I mean, everybody knows the first they came for, because, and then I didn't look, and I didn't listen, and then they came for this and this, and then I didn't, it wasn't me, and then in the end they came for me, and there was nobody left. Who could protect me from this? And these kinds of people are the people who are the first to notice this stuff. So where were we? It's just nearly over here. When we enter into business with a company whose boss takes delight in mass layoffs of tech workers because it disempowers those who might speak out against the company, keeping a list of non-Anglophones' names that some members of the team find hilarious, we have a decent sense of who we're dealing with. Know the signs. We here in the libraries are world-weary and sophisticated. Okay, that's a little bit of a yeah. We recognize that it's the nature of our world, so interconnected now. We think that all interconnection makes us stronger, more vibrant. It's wondrous, but it also means that as we encounter difference, we need to do the work, as Hansen mocks. Be aware and be open. Not every situation is going to be easy, but bringing our whole selves, another phrase that he mocks, to it has an impact, makes it more real, more human. There are always going to be the free riders, tech companies perhaps, who benefit from the interconnectedness of the world while refusing to do the work. They may even taunt from their blogs those who try. Their paths are going to intersect with ours. That's just the way it works. Often we are not in a position to choose not to deal with them. But occasionally we are. Not because we want to eliminate anyone's livelihood or harry executives, or because we imagine our subscription fee makes much of a difference, but just because we can. In this case, there are other productivity tools that can fill the space. In this case, we have options, and we've chosen to end our subscription with Basecamp. Thank you for listening.